Good morning. News Radio 923 AM 1620, 738. I'm Andrew McKay. Joining us now by phone, we have Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you. So I know we have one, obviously, substantial case that we're going to talk about at Community Maritime Park. But before we get to that, anything else that's happened over the last few days that we don't already know about?
No, not really. And before we get into this, I forgot to tell you this while we were talking off air just a moment ago. But I heard you and Reese talking about May the 4th yesterday. And even though I've never seen a Star Wars movie, I knew what you meant. But I've got one for today, and it's May the 5th. It's Cinco de Mayo, and May the 5th, stay home in your liquor cabinet and not in your car, especially if the seal's been broken, because then it's an open container.
I got you. I'll take it. Hey, yeah, don't drink and drive. Don't drink in the car. Don't litter with your beer bottles out the side. There's all kinds of things connected to this. But, yeah, don't violate the open container law in your car, right? That's a good safety reminder. I appreciate you telling people that today. So let's talk about this horrible tragedy that took place at Community Maritime Park over the weekend. Most people kind of know the basic facts of the case, but I don't want to tell them anything that's inaccurate. Can you just kind of tell people what happened? And you may well know things, of course, that I don't know that you can tell folks about this incident.
Well, the victim was on a raft that was being pulled by a vehicle across the retention pond at a high rate of speed. And then when the raft came off the water and hit the grass, the victim was ejected and hit the concrete or hit the pavement, the parking lot, and was killed instantly. So it was a very, very tragic or situation. We don't want to see that ever happen again. And, you know, people wonder why sometimes we have to wait a day or two or sometimes longer to see if we have charges. And if we have charges, what those charges are, we have to look at the totality of the circumstances before we do that.
Okay. Well, I have questions about this. We've been talking about it this morning. But just on a fact basis, were you able to discern whether they were trying to hit the embankment or whether things just went wrong or why the person didn't jump off when it got to the embankment? Because that was a part of it that I didn't fully understand. And maybe you weren't able to figure it out either, but do you guys know that?
Well, the traffic homicide investigators are talking to witnesses and people that were there and involved, and I'm not privy to that information at this point.
Okay, fair enough. And I understand that even if you knew, sometimes you don't disclose because that can compromise their ability to vet witnesses' accuracy. That's no problem with me ever. Do we know or can you say whether the driver was impaired drinking at all or anything else?
Yeah, I can't say. I don't know. Okay. I haven't been told whether that's the case or not. No.
Okay. So then my other questions have to do with the charges, right? It's negligent manslaughter. And look, part of my problem with this is, and I'm on the fence, but I lean towards not charging. And I lean towards not charging because people do all kinds of risky things all the time and it goes wrong, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there was a charge necessary. And I'm not sure what it benefits the community in terms of what deterrence or punishment or anything like that if it's an adult on the inner tube and it's an adult driving the car. Now, if there's impairment involved, that's a different story. But if they're not impaired, can you maybe explain why the charges would be filed or what would be the justification for filing charges against the driver?
Yeah, and not talking about this specific case, but any case, if a person asks you to do something and you know that it could cause harm, great bodily harm or death to that person, you have a responsibility to turn that person down, to simply not do it. And if you choose to do it anyway and the person is hurt or killed, then there's some responsibility there. And that's in many different cases. And again, not this one specifically, but that's why we have to look very carefully at the circumstances, the totality of the circumstances before we place charges.
I guess when I think in that context, I think of cases like, you know, I do stuff with my boys, not necessarily every day, but, you know, routinely, where they could get hurt. I mean, that's just doing boy stuff. I'm not saying this is exactly the same as that, but it seems like, you know, in life, it's all kinds of times when we do things where people could get harmed and we embrace that risk as an accepted part of the activity, whether it's skiing or skydiving or anything else. What differentiates mere accidents that don't justify a charge from negligent manslaughter kinds of situations?
Well, a lot of times, let's look at speed. If someone is in a car doing the speed limit and has a crash, then no. But if the person is in the car doing 110 miles an hour and has a crash, then that driver should have known
Sure.
or knew that could cause great bodily harm or death. So that's what kicks it up. You know, you can do the same thing, whether, you know, in a non-reckless manner, and there, of course, there wouldn't be any charges. But when you kick it up and you do things to where it could cause someone to get hurt, and you knew, that or should have known that, then charges can be placed.
So pulling somebody on an inner tube with a truck at Community Maritime Park, no. Pulling a parasailer on a truck down a highway when you've got a permit, or down a road, or, you know, with a boat and somebody gets hurt, yes, because of the normality of the behavior, because of the potential licensing requirements. Are those the kinds of things that you look at for the distinction?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And obviously, again, impairment, distraction, particular circumstances, you know, I understand those can be factors as well. So I'm assuming that some of this won't really be clear until we get more details about the case or until it goes to trial. So I appreciate that. You obviously have been following the news. You know about the Vicky and Casey White, the escape, which is a crazy story altogether. First of all, has PPD, because we're not that far away, has PPD, to your knowledge, been involved or asked for resources or to be on the lookout, anything connected to that case?
And not that I'm aware of. If we are contacted, if they may be in this area, of course, the PPD and other agencies will participate in locating them. You know, they should be pretty easy to spot. There's she's fairly short, and he's, I think, 6'7" or maybe taller. So,
nine, yeah.
Everyone's looking for him, and 6'9", okay. So, yeah, pretty easy to spot. But no, as far as I know, we have not been contacted about that.
There was an interesting fact about this case that I thought you would appreciate, and it reminded me of conversations we've had about, again, holding information within the police agency. The car that they thought they had escaped in, they had a description of the car. The car had specific damage to it that would help identify it compared to other cars. That was sent to all the law enforcement agencies. Law enforcement agencies saw the note that said, "This is not for public disclosure." One of them failed to follow that note, failed to see the note, put it on social media. It got on, you know, everybody shared it, everybody saw it. And that meant they had the ability to ditch the car and change to a different car. Now they don't know what they're driving anymore. Can you just maybe take a second and talk about the value of keeping some information secret for law enforcement purposes?
Yeah, so when someone's on the run like that, you can bet that they're watching the media. They're watching the news. They want to know what we know. And information like that doesn't need to be put out always to the public, because that helps them either conceal that damage or completely get rid of the car, as you mentioned. So, and then there's other times to where we've hit a brick wall, and we've got to put the information out. So hopefully somebody will notice that because of that damage. So I've seen it done both ways, and there are reasons why. Sometimes that information is not immediately put out to the public.
And it's a good balancing act, right, to figure out where you're at in the investigation and how, you know, valuable it would be to hold it versus how valuable it would be to share it publicly. That's why I wanted to mention it to you, because we've talked many times about that, and it's a very poignant case of how, you know, disclosing information actually has hindered the ability to apprehend these folks. We're talking to Mike Wood, Public Information Officer for PPD. We had the memorial for fallen officers, and we had the retirement, well, not retirement, but the last serving day for Jimmy Donahoe. Right?
Yeah, it was. Each year we have that ceremony to honor officers that have fallen, and May is the month to do that. Most agencies will. And also, yeah, as you mentioned, Lieutenant Jimmy Donahoe, who knows a lot of people. A lot of people know him. He's been around a long time, and what a wonderful asset to the police department he has been. And his last day in uniform was yesterday, and we're going to miss him. But we wish him and his family a happy retirement.
Absolutely. To me, Jimmy Donahoe is the guy, like, you know, in that old joke about Bruce being famous, you know, and then he gets up with the Pope, you know, and somebody looks up and says, "Who's that guy standing next to Bruce?" I feel like if Jimmy Donahoe and the Pope are standing next to each other, somebody might be like, "Who's that guy standing next to Jimmy Donahoe?" You know, like everybody knows him in Pensacola. Last thing I wanted to ask you is, we always try to do a cop myth of some kind. Now, we've done this one a little bit before, but it leads to a follow-up. If somebody's like an undercover cop and you ask them, you know, "Hey, are you a cop?" They do not have to tell you they're a cop. This is a common myth in television, and, you know, it sort of serves cop purposes that people think that's true, but it's not true. But it leads to a second question, which is, do the police have to tell you the truth? I mean, like, I assume there are at least some circumstances where police have to tell you the truth. Is that right?
Well, yeah, there is. Like, charges and things like that, the officers are not going to lie to the person. But what they will do is not show their hand. You know, sometimes they'll withhold information. Sometimes they'll bluff. There's several investigative techniques that I won't get into. But, yeah, they do not have to be forthcoming with a suspect at all times.
Which makes perfect sense. It's not something people always necessarily, you know, don't realize. Of course, under normal circumstances, police are almost always going to be truthful and helpful. And if you're not doing anything bad, you don't really have to worry about that. But that's something that I thought was kind of interesting is, you know, the obligation for truthfulness for police is maybe not exactly what you think it is. Mike Wood, he is a public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you so much for the work. Thanks for helping us be safe and understand the job of the law enforcement officer. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. So-